Okay, guys, today we're going to be going through Numbers chapters 10 through 12. And so what did we talk about last week? I know that's an unfair question. What do y'all remember from last week we talked about? Oh, okay, that's a Sunday school answer, holiness. We talked about Jesus. What else do y'all remember from last week?
Dedication.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. Well, the first things we talked about, setting apart the Levites instead of the firstborn. Remember that? All the firstborn were supposed to be God's, but he kind of switched around and said, I'll take the Levites instead. We didn't have quite as many Levites, and so there was a little bit of money that was set aside, too, from the children of Israel to kind of help them get stuff started for the Levites. Yeah, it was kind of weird. Remember also we talked about the first annual Passover. They celebrated Passover. And then as a result of that, what else did they have happen? Was everybody...
The group of guys who couldn't because someone had died, so God gave them specific instructions if you could not celebrate Passover on Passover day when you were allowed to do that.
Yeah, provisions made for those that were unclean or unable to attend. We were out of the country and couldn't make Passover. What do we do then? And so God made these provisions for them. So that's kind of the things we talked about before. And now we're going to continue on from there. This is kind of, and that's why I gave you the handout there. It's a little bit difficult to read on here, but as we look in our trekking through Egypt and everything, we're coming up to the southern area right about there is where we're going to be today talking about. And it's kind of a big day for them because in chapter 10 we're going to finish up with this one last section talking about some of the instruments they're going to be using, and this is just prior to them on the move. The Lord said to Moses, make two trumpets of hammered silver and use them for calling the community together and for having the camp set out. When both are sounded, the whole community is to assemble before you at the entrance of the tent of meeting. If only one is sounded, the leader, the heads of the clans of Israel, are to assemble before you. When a trumpet blast is sounded, the tribes camping on the east are to set out. At the sounding of the second blast, the camps on the south are to set out. The blast will be the signal for setting out. Together the assembly, blow the trumpets, but not with the signal for setting out. The sons of Aaron, the priests, are to blow the trumpets. This is to be a lasting ordinance for you and the generations to come. When you go into battle in your own land against the enemy who is oppressing you, sound a blast on the trumpets. Then you will be remembered by the Lord your God and rescued from your enemies. Also, at your times of rejoicing, appointed festivals and new feasts, you're to sound the trumpets over the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. There would be a memorial for you, for your God. I am the Lord your God. So what's the purpose of these silver horns?
Well, they're signals to the people, but also a reminder that God goes before them.
Yeah. That's a calling out for the assembly, right? To gather the people together or just gather the heads of the clans together. So it's a communication device he's got. It's also for going into battle, right? In Numbers 31:6, I can just look it up for you real quick. I had it marked. 31:6 tells us, and Moses sent them 1,000 from each tribe to the war, and Phinehas the son of Eleazar the priest to the war with them, and the holy vessels and the trumpets for alarm in his hand. So that's the trumpets being used. It was a little bit different than Jericho. Remember Jericho? They used ram's horns to blow as they marched around, this kind of thing. So not the same kind of trumpets, but still, that's what was being used here. Now then, I've got this picture for you. Again, this is silver trumpets from the 17th century illustrated German Bible. And here we show the trumpets being used, and you got to put one hand on the waist and blow it like that, right? The Germans are very artistic and comforting people. Yeah. Well, there's the other picture of them being used by the, I think, in some type of...
photographer on site.
Yeah, that's right. Back in Numbers 10, it's labeled for us and everything. Kodak moment. Okay. So Israelites leave Sinai. On the 20th day of the second month of the second year, the cloud lifted. So how much time has elapsed between now and when we started our little numbers talking in chapter 1 of Numbers? Hmm?
1 year.
How much time? It says up there on the 20th day. You can look up Numbers 1:1. On the 20th day of the second year of the second month of the second year. And what does Numbers 1:1 tell us?
First.
So how long has it been? Pardon? Yep, 20 days. That's all the time that's passed now. And what did we talk about in chapter 1? Do y'all remember that a little bit? What kind of things were going on in chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4? We talked about what? It was the organization of the tribes, right? In the middle was who? Who was in the middle of the camp?
The tabernacle.
The tabernacle. And who was out to the east of us from the tabernacle? If I'm the tabernacle... Judah. Judah was out this way. I'm not going to ask who the other tribes were. Judah and Moses were on the east side, because which way is the promised land?
To the east.
Or actually, that way, to the east, right? To the east. We're going that way. So that's the way everything was set up. It goes on to say, then the Israelites set out from the desert of Sinai, traveling from place to place until the cloud came to rest in the desert of Paran. They set out this first time at the Lord's command through Moses. The divisions of the camp of Judah went first under their standard, and it goes on to talk about how everyone did their thing there. I'm not going to read through that. It'll talk about Reuben and how he went on, and remember we talked about how these guys were supposed to be moving through there. It talks about the Kohathites, and remember the Kohathites were part of the guys that were grabbing the pieces of the tabernacle. They couldn't package stuff up, right? The priests had to package everything, but the Kohathites carried it. So the tabernacle gets shipped off, and then Ephraim goes, and all these guys keep going on. Naphtali's going to be the last one. And it says, and this was the order of march for the Israelite division as they set out. Everything's good, right? We're walking with God. Everything's good. Pastor last week talked about the obedience of the Israelites and everything. Life is good right now. We come up to this section now, and this is just one of those kind of head-scratching questions or sections, because it says, now Moses said to Hobab, the son of Reuel, who is Reuel? Do y'all remember who that is? I didn't remember who it was either. It's another name for Jethro, because it's going to tell us the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, and we know Jethro better as father-in-law than Reuel for whichever reason. We are setting out for a place about which the Lord said, I will give to you. Come with us, and we will treat you well, for the Lord has promised good things to Israel. He said, no, I will not go. I am going back to my own land and my own people. But Moses said, please do not leave us. You know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you can be our eyes. If you come with us, we will share with you whatever good things the Lord gives us. So... The part that I scratch my head over is that there's not this little interlude that says, and God talked to Moses and said, Moses was saying, I can't do this. Kind of like when God first talks to him and Moses said, you know, I can't do this. I'll send Aaron, your brother, with you. Well, there's not that kind of interlude that says, well, you know, Moses, I'll send your brother-in-law with you and he'll go with you. There's just this section that says, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm inviting him to go with us. Now then, kind of the long story of the ramifications of this is that Hobab is going to go with them, and they're going to settle. And in Judges, we read just a little bit about that. And... that's 116, yeah. And the descendants of the Kenite, remember Kenite, Moses' father-in-law went up from the city of Palms with the sons of Judah to the wilderness of Judah, which is in the south of Arad, and they went and lived with the people. So Jethro is going to be considered a Kenite, but a Kenite is also a Midianite because it's from the land of Midian. So we have this Kenite idea that's going on right now. And if we go just a couple of other chapters down the road into Judges, chapter 4. Judges chapter 4 now is going to be about Deborah. Remember Deborah, the judge? And there's this guy named Sisera, who is the bad guy. And the children of Israel are at war with this guy. But he's getting beaten, so he's fleeing, and Barak is after him. Well, Sisera is going to stop over at Heber, the Kenite, descendant of Jethro, right? And Hobab and all that kind of thing. So he's one of these later generations that moved into the area. He kind of separated himself from everybody, and he's doing his own thing. Well, Sisera doesn't see him as an enemy, and so he's going to stop by. Now, Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite, for there was peace between Jabin, the king, bad guy, and the house of Heber, the Kenite, neutral party. Switzerland, okay? He stopped in Switzerland. So he goes in, and he's going to go into the tent, right? She says, hide under here, rest up. He falls asleep. What does she do next? Drive a tent peg in the temple, right? So that's the roundabout way of how this decision to bring these guys along filters into our story. I don't know why this happens right here, why Moses felt compelled to ask him to come along. The Bible doesn't tell us. I just know that further along we read in Judges kind of the consequences of them coming along and that kind of thing. So God uses all kinds of stuff to accomplish his purposes. But again, Israel is obedient at this point. So they traveled out. So they set out from the mountains of the Lord and traveled 3 days. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them during those days. The cloud of the Lord was over them by day when they set out from camp. And I read one commentary on this also that talked about that cloud. Weather being pretty sunny out there, especially in the desert and everything, not too much shade, the cloud actually provided shade for them as they traveled, somewhat comforting. At least that's one of the theologians' take on the provision of the cloud and comfort to the people. But the cloud of the Lord was before them by day, and when they set out from camp. Whenever the ark set out, Moses said, rise up, Lord, may your enemies be scattered, may your foes flee before you. Whenever it came to rest, he said, return, Lord, to the countless thousands of Israel. Life is good. Things are going great. Then we have chapter 11. Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses. He prayed to the Lord, and fire died down. And the fire died down. So the place was called Deborah because the fire of the Lord burned among them. The Deborah means burning. But we're going to see this occurring over and over, where there's going to be some type of disobedience, some type of complaint. There's going to be the discipline or consequences of that. And then there's going to be the naming of the place. And we're going to see that over and over. Sometimes in this complaint, after the complaint and during the punishment phase, we'll see Moses interceding for the people. Sometimes we don't. But you'll see the same pattern over and over, where there's a complaint, punishment, and then the naming of the site. That's just the way it goes. So not so good, but we're still moving on. The rabble with them began to crave other food. Again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. Now the rabble that's with them, this is a group that consists of descendants from, they actually lived in Egypt. They were traveling with the Israelites. But this group is consisted of descendants from Shem and the Egyptians. They were Shemites, I believe. It's not Shemites.
Shemite or
Semitic. That's what it is. Because they were descendants of Shem, but they weren't necessarily descendants of Abraham. and some Egyptians in there. And it says, it continues on by saying, again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remembered the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost, also the cucumbers and melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We will never see anything but this manna. Just complaint. Now, these folks had come from the land of Goshen, which is like the breadbasket of Egypt. And all those foods that they want, which are good foods, but they require water to grow. Lots of melons and all that kind of stuff. So they're missing that stuff. And out in the desert, they've got to change their ways as far as what they want to eat. Now, this tells us they lost their appetite. There's some translations that can translate as our bodies are all dried up or our lives are vanquished. Either way, they're just whining about the fact that they don't have what they wanted. There's this short passage in here that talks about the manna. It says manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. The people went around gathering it, then ground it in a handmill or crushed it in a mortar. They cooked it in a pot, made it into loaves, and it tasted something like made with olive oil. When dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. So that's how we got the manna and everything. God's providing for it. They're just not happy about that. Moses heard the people of every family wailing at the entrance to their tents. The Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. He asked the Lord, why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put this burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why did you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their ancestors? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat to eat. Now this thing is sometimes called Moses' lament. And it goes on. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. Is this how you're going to treat me? Please go ahead and kill me. If I found favor in your eyes, do not let me face my own ruin. So Moses is getting a bit dramatic here, and probably rightfully so. Yeah, this is the same verse, but I went back and kind of highlighted the you and your and me and I and this kind of going back and forth that Moses puts in there. And there's a lot of me's and I's in here.
I'm sorry, but he's like, did I give birth?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them go to the tent of meeting that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take some of the power of the Spirit that is on you and put it on them. They will share the burden of the people with you, that you will not have to carry it alone. What I appreciate about this section now is that Moses had this complaint, and it just wasn't a one-line complaint. It was kind of a litany of, why have you left me here like this? And yet God doesn't rail on him and like consume him with fire or being, you know, shwack, whatever else you want to say. God is compassionate in that, says Moses, I listen to you, and this is what we're going to do. For Moses' side of it, though, he's obedient. He's not done talking yet, though. Tell the people, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat. The Lord heard you when you wailed. If you only had meat to eat, we were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will eat it. And you will eat it, and you will not eat it for just one day or 2 days. He goes kind of Dr. Seuss on this. Not one day or 2 days or 5 or 10 or 20 days. But for the whole month, until it comes out your nostrils and you loathe it, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wailed before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? So God's answering Moses now, He said, I'm sending them meat, and they're going to have plenty of meat. But Moses isn't done talking.
Kind of reminds me of that saying, careful what you pray for, God might get it.
Yeah, that's right. And they're going to get it. But Moses said, here I am, 600,000 men on foot, and you say, I will give them meat to eat for a whole month? Would that they have enough if flocks and herds were slaughtered for them? Would they have caught enough if all the fish in the sea were caught for them? So now he's questioning God's ability to even do this. So it wasn't just now whining about the people, but now he's questioning God's ability to do this. And yet God, the Lord answered Moses, is the Lord's arm too short? Now you will see whether or not I say will come true for you. So Moses went out. This is his response. So Moses went out and told the people what the Lord had said. He brought together 70 of their elders and had them stand around the tent. Then the Lord came down in a cloud and spoke with him. And he took some of the power of the Spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. When the Spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but did not do so again. One of the commentators I read pointed out that when it talks about taking some of the Spirit that was upon him, it didn't mean that the Spirit that rested upon Moses was in some way diminished by this act of putting it on these other 70 men. Simply that they didn't have the same Spirit upon him that was on Moses didn't dwell on these other 70 men. Though they prophesied and everything, it wasn't the same for those men as it was for Moses. Is there anything else you want to add to that, Pastor? Anything like that? Sir? Okay. You'll have to refresh my memory, but
they had the meat for a month.
Okay.
And it sounded like that was the end of it.
Okay. That's what okay. I'll still wait. However, two men whose names were Eldad and Medad had remained in camp. They were listed among the elders, but did not go out to the tent. Yet the Spirit also rested upon them, and they prophesied in the camp. A young man ran and told Moses, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Who do you think the young man is?
So Joshua, son of Nun?
Snitch.
Caleb?
I don't know exactly who it is. I know that the next verse says, Joshua, son of Nun, who had been Moses' aide since youth, spoke up and said, Moses, my Lord, stop them. Moses, I mean, Joshua really cared about Moses. But Moses replied, are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put his Spirit on them. Then Moses and the elders of Israel returned to camp. Does that sound familiar to you? From some of the New Testament, Paul's writings, where Paul wished that the Spirit of God would have rested upon them when they were talking about I'm of this and I'm of that and all this kind of stuff. Now the wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea, and it scattered them up to 2 cubits deep in all around the camp, as far as a day's walk in any direction. All that day and night and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers, which is about 38 bushels. Then they spread them out around the camp. They were going to do that for drying purposes. But while the meat was still between their teeth, before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore, the place is called Kibroth Hattaavah, because they buried the people who craved other food. From Kibroth Hattaavah, the people traveled to Hazeroth and stayed there. So again, we see this complaint, punishment. We don't see Moses intervening for any reason whatsoever, and then renaming the place. Now, some say it's food poisoning the people died of. I'm not sure exactly what it was. But this whole rabble kind of thing, remember that, because we're going to see that kind of play out a little bit further in this next incident. And that's the end of chapter 11. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses. Now, who is Miriam? Not just his sister, his what sister?
Big sister.
His big sister. His older big sister. His big sister that said, oh, Pharaoh's daughter here, I know who can take care of the little baby and everything. That same little girl is now this little girl right here. And she just wasn't any girl either, because she was important. back in Exodus, let's see her name show up here again. I should have had this bookmarked, and I apologize for that. In Exodus 15, in chapter 15, we're going to see the deliverance sung by Moses and the people. So there's this whole song thing, kind of psalm thing going on that's talking about the deliverance. But in verse 20, it says, "And Miriam, the prophetess, Aaron's sister," Moses' sister too, right? "Took the timbrel," which is kind of like a tambourine thing, "in her hand, and all the women went out after her," so she was a leader, "with timbrel and dancing. And Miriam answered them." This is kind of like the refrain from them singing these praises to God. She's singing back. "Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and his rider he has hurled into the sea." Which were they talking about then? What event was that? Yeah, so it's been a great time for Israel, right? The Egyptians have been wiped out. She's leading the women and all the singing. She's a prophetess, which is probably, I think, the first prophetess, Pastor. I don't remember seeing anyone else in the Bible being called a prophetess. So she was in a female leadership role for the females and everything within the Israelite nation, which is a pretty big deal. So she's just not Moses' sister, but she's got, if I want to say, political power behind her. She has an ear of the women, if you will. And that's a pretty powerful ear to have. But it says, "Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite." Now then, remember what we talked about before with those rabbles. Those rabbles were not us. Those were those, we are Israelites, they were them, not us. And here our brother Moses is married to a Cushite. Now, this Cushite that she's talking about, do y'all remember Moses' wife's name from earlier in Exodus? I know, yeah, Zipporah. Very good, Molly. And I didn't even give her the answer.
It's pretty bad.
It's from the Walt Disney version? All right. We educate with Walt.
The Ten Commandments.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, she's
from the monster's. Oh. All right. I feel educated now. So, Miss Zipporah, remember, she's a daughter of Jethro, and he's a Midianite. And now they're saying this Cushite. And there are three explanations for this. One is that Zipporah may have died. And simply that Moses had remarried and she was a Cushite. Now, Cushite is typically referred to as someone that would be from the area of Nubia. Okay?
My translation is Ethiopian.
Okay, same area. But she's going to be darker skinned and that kind of thing. So she's different, okay? The other translation is that the Midianite, and there's a Cushite, or Cushan, which is land overlaps the land of Midian, and this is just simply referring to her, the same woman, Zipporah, by a different, instead of saying a Midianite, Cushite. And they're, because Cushan and Midian kind of overlapped, and that's how they get this kind of translation for that. And then the other translation is that they're referring to her, let me remember one other thing. Where's that one? Oh, Pastor, I'm choking on this part. The third translation, it was either her or Ethiopian. And it just escaped me. I'm sorry, guys. But basically, it's either Zipporah or it's not Zipporah. The idea, though, is that this woman wasn't an Israelite. And so she's bringing that in now against them. Has the Lord, and she goes on to say, "Has the Lord spoken only through Moses?" they asked. "Hasn't he also spoken through us?" And the Lord heard this. Now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. At once the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, "Come to the tent of meeting, all three of you." So the three of them went out. Then the Lord came down, it's cleansing time again, Then the Lord came down to the in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the entrance to the tent and summoned Aaron and Miriam. When the two of them stepped forward, he said to them, "Listen to my words." Man, don't you know that something bad's going to happen? This is not going to be a good thing. This one part where it talks about, now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. The word, it's not, they don't use the word, normal word for humble here. The word is anah, which is, but it's not the word usually associated with humbleness, meekness, or weakness, but it conveys an individual's dependence upon the Lord. So that's what's being kind of demonstrated here. It kind of goes back to, remember when Moses first meets God in the burning bush and all that kind of thing, and God tells him that he wants him to go to Egypt. And what does, how does he respond to him in all that? Pardon?
He wasn't worthy.
Yeah. He says, who am I to go to talk to Pharaoh and to lead the children of Israel out? Who am I to do something like that? So he realizes that I do not have the talent for this, but God goes on to say, I will be with you. When God tells Moses that, Moses says, okay, I'll obey. And by faith he obeys and takes on the mission. That's what they're trying to convey here with Moses being a leader. It's the idea that he is submissive, realizes that in his own weakness, in his own strength, he can't do the job, but it depends upon the Lord to accomplish whatever it is the Lord wants to accomplish. But going on, again, he said, listen to my words. When there was a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams. But this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly, not in riddles. He sees the forms of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? The idea here is that speaking against Moses is like speaking against God. You don't want to do it. The anger of the Lord burned against them, and he left them. When the cloud lifted from above the tent, Miriam's skin was leprous. It became white as snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had defiling skin disease. And he said to Moses, "Please, my Lord, I ask you not to hold against us the sin we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like a stillborn infant coming from its mother's womb with its flesh half eaten." So immediately Aaron's concerned about her and the fact that she's going to be put out. She's gone from the family. She's just cut off. And he's concerned for her. So the first thing he does is he apologizes to Moses. But part of me also has to believe that he's also concerned about himself too. Because if Miriam took the hit, I may be next. And one thing I forgot to... And I apologize for this, guys. I'm going to just back up real quick. In the very first part where it said Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses, the whole idea, the verb form of this thing, and I wouldn't know this unless I had read it, the verb form is in this feminine gender, which means the instigator of this whole thing was Miriam. At least that's the way it reads. And so Aaron, bless him, she must be right. And so he just follows on, kind of like the golden calf thing. He's just going to follow on. And he did that with Miriam. He's following her footsteps because she laid it out, and that's what they're going to do. And so the verb form of this thing kind of infers that Miriam's the ringleader behind this talking against Moses. And it confirms, again, with it, when we talk about her leprous disease now. She's the one that took the brunt of it. It's not like this idea, well, God's against women or something like that. No, she was the ringleader of this, and she was punished for it. Now, Aaron loves her. He's probably concerned about himself as well. He tells Moses, "I'm sorry that we did this." Moses is a great guy. Moses cried out to the Lord and said, "Please, God, heal her." Four words he says, "Please, God, heal her." That's all he says, and God hears him and listens to him. Those words would have been hard to come out of my mouth, that's for sure. I like my sister just fine, but man, that's as much as Moses had been through, and Miriam must have seen that, but She just kind of pushed it. The Lord replied to Moses, if her father had spit in her face, would she not have been disgraced for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days. After that, she can be brought back. So Miriam was confined outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on until she was brought back. After that, the people left for Hazeroth and encamped at the desert of Paran. Moses' prayer was answered on Miriam's behalf, and she's restored. But the consequences of that, we see, is that there's a 7-day waiting period that she has to wait to before she can move on, before she's restored and can be moved on. So the consequences of her sin affect the whole tribe of Israel because no one's moving until she's ready. It kind of goes back to that leadership thing. She was in a position of leadership, and God wasn't moving until the leadership was restored.
Well, in the sequence of events, would they also be burying dead people in as a result of this quail poison?
No, I'm sure that, yes, sir. There's probably some unclean people associated with that as well, having to take care of that. The one thing I can't quite tell you is how much time occurred between the die-off from the folks and the quail and when Miriam had her little thing. But, I mean, they are back-to-back, you're right. I don't know, do you know the answer to that one, Pastor? But they are, Numbers gives us back-to-back kind of thing. The one thing, too, that I wanted to point out is that when Moses had his argument or complaint against God, the only one that knew about that were Moses and God. And Moses was bluntly honest with God, letting him know how he felt about things. And God didn't smash him for doing that. He was okay listening through the whole thing. And yet, in this case, Miriam doesn't go to God. She's going to think, I'm going to manipulate the people. I'm going to manipulate my brother. I'm going to get my way because I know how to do that. And we see far different consequences here than we see with Moses and that type of thing. Do you have any questions? Or any questions, Miss Laura? You've been quiet the whole time. Which is okay. Will, anything, buddy? No, okay. Anything else, guys? This is as much as we had for today. Next time, we get to talk about the spies and all that kind of stuff with Pastor Tim. And that's it. Yes, honey?
You know, so she was outside the camp for 7 days.
Yeah.
You know, though, if she had the leprosy, because if she was sick the 7 days, or was it more just she has to be put her in a room for 7 days?
That's an interesting question, because what the Leviticus law regarding the cleansing for leprosy and all that kind of thing hasn't been written yet, but it's assumed that she followed that cleansing procedure, you know, go show yourself and all that kind of thing. That procedure applied to her. That's what the smart guys think.
Okay.
That would have applied to her, and that she had to do that. Whether that involved all the shaving and all that other kind of purification stuff, I don't know. But the other thing I can't tell you either is how her status within the leadership was affected by this disobedience. Whether it was or not, that one, I don't know, unless you had knew anything about that, Pastor Tim, or Vic or Josh. I like doing that. I'm sorry. Okay, guys, thank you all very much for the time, and we are dismissed.